I am joined by Peter Stiepelman, who is the superintendent of the Columbia Public Schools. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. As Tim was talking, I was thinking, only in Missouri. I'm kidding.
Yeah, you know, you know that's one of my pet peeves. Yeah, only in Missouri do we have it go from 60 to 30, and in New York,
and in Vermont, and in Massachusetts,
and in Rhode Island, and, you know, just name a state. It's happened everywhere.
My parents are quite happy they recently just moved to Florida.
Oh, they headed to Florida. It doesn't happen there probably.
My mother
very
called
often.
Last night and said, oh, do you hit the weather? I'm so glad we're in Florida.
I want to pick up on several things, and I appreciate you coming in early. This is the third time we've had like 6 o'clock visits with Peter Stiepelman, the superintendent of the Columbia Public Schools. Posted online in the Missourian today, it comes from a meeting that was held talking about Wednesday. District's Finance Committee presented a revised timeline for the building of the new middle school. So it looks like you might present this to the school board on Monday.
We will, actually. Almost a month ago, the Long Range Facility Committee came together and asked the administration what it might look like if we were to prioritize the middle school in our 10-year plan. You know, 10-year plans are ambitious, and we're in year 7 of our 10-year plan, and this is the first time we've had to make a mid-course correction. And what we're doing is we are prioritizing the middle school and delaying the additions to Lee and Battle Elementary School. Both Lee and Battle are not overcrowded, but we were trying to get ahead of the game. We were trying to get out of trailers at Lee, and the priority really is the middle school. And so then the Long Range Facility Committee directed us to bring it to the Finance Committee to find out, can we do it? And so last night with our bond council there and our committee members and a pretty good crowd of onlookers, our board came to the decision that they would recommend to the full board that we go ahead and make that happen. So we'll take it to the board on Monday night.
When the conversation came up of maybe speeding up the middle school's building, I remember reading in some media accounts some Lee parents were unhappy with that because they felt like it was their turn and that they had been promised first. But it is, again, one of those situations where you have to respond to what the environment is and what the conditions are.
So you have to look objectively at the situation. And Lee has about 300 students. Half of them are there on lottery because it's a mix of lottery and attendance area. They have trailers. We would like to get out of the trailer business, but they're not overcrowded. This is about improving their programming and the facility, just like we're doing at Grant that starts this summer. At Battle Elementary, it is not overcrowded. It's at 78% capacity. We see that there's a building going on across the street in the new subdivision there, and so we wanted to get ahead of the game there. Now, compare that to Gentry Middle School that has projected to have 900 students next year. It won't, because we're managing that through an attendance area adjustment that will also take place on Monday night. They'll make a decision about that as well. So that will be, that's an emotional decision. That's a hard decision when the district has to manage growth through an attendance area adjustment when families have purchased their homes, have moved to the neighborhood, who have an expectation of which school they'll go to. They all say, I know all of our schools are good. I chose this one, and now you're changing it. So that's hard. So back to the 10-year plan, it's year 7. We see objectively that we have a greater need in managing the middle school. We looked at the grade levels and how many students are in each grade level, and it's somewhat leveling off at elementary, where we now only have about 1,300 per grade level. But there's a bubble coming up to middle school with 1,400 per grade level. And so it's really important that the board consider, and we will recommend, and that is to accelerate by 2 years. So really, it's just a 2-year delay on the others. And in the grand scheme of things, a 2-year delay is not so bad. However, it's bad for those families who had an expectation and their children are going to graduate out of elementary school and they won't get to see the benefit of the addition on that school.
On Monday, when you talk about the readjustment of the boundaries for attendance for Jefferson and Gentry Middle Schools, how many students would you anticipate in the proposal are going to be affected?
About 100 students. So initially we were looking at between 125 and 150. And the committee work is a messy work, but it's good work. And in that work, we discovered that what we would need, what would we end up doing is reducing at Gentry, but then overcrowding Jeff. And so by accelerating the process and opening up the school early in the south of town, provided we find land, so we're in the process of doing that, moving 100 students, between 75 and 100 students, will be okay, should be able to meet our needs. So about 100 students.
And what will that mean for Jefferson Middle School? Will it mean
it won't be trailers. It'll be about 704 students if all students were to leave and go from Gentry. So that's taking into consideration the committee is going to recommend that 8th graders be able to stay at Gentry for their last year. And that's about 26 students. So that's why I say between 75 and 100.
When you are looking for land, can you... I doubt if you'd be able to tell me specifically plots of land that you're looking for, or could you?
Well, I can tell you one that is off the table now, because there's a great flat piece of land right across the street from Mr. Kroenke's house, but his representative indicated he's not interested in selling or donating
that
land.
Would that be right across Nifong?
Yes. There's a nice flat piece of land. It's just perfect.
Wouldn't that be amazing, though, how close that would actually physically be to Gentry?
It's true. It's like a stone's throw, and not dissimilar from Lang and Oakland, right? They're about 0.8 miles from each other. The density of homes in the southwest of town is pretty dramatic, and the possibilities of homes east of Gentry, off of K near Rockbridge Elementary School, when Gans Creek Road comes through and goes all the way to Discovery Ridge to 63, there is the projection of what that's going to look like in terms of single-family homes. And so we're trying to be ready for what the future will bring.
Again, how much land do you need for middle school?
About 40 acres.
And how far out would you consider right now?
So we won't put one on the Missouri River. So that's about as far south as we won't go. No, so we actually got together last Friday as a small working group of the administration with our consultant who's been looking at properties. And we looked at 26 different properties that not all of them are for sale. It's just this is where there is 40 acres that would potentially meet our needs. We narrowed that list down to about 6, and we think 3 are viable. And so we'll be bringing that. And you have to balance, right? The community wants to know, how are you going to spend our money, right? And at the same time, the moment you make it very public, then the landowner, who may not be that interested in selling, says, oh, it's the schools? It's going to be this much. So it's a fine balancing game. So at the work session on February 23rd, we will talk about the properties that we like and the ones that we think are the most appropriate for a middle school.
And that by that time, would you have contacted the property owners and saying, we are interested in this, let's start talking ballpark figures?
Typically, at that point, someone will have reached out and said, we'd like to talk about whether or not you're interested or not. Typically, we go into closed session with the board to get direction from them about how much we are authorized to offer. So the board really drives a lot of this, which is important because they are the elected officials and they're the ones making a big decision on budgets. They have 3 jobs: hire and fire me, approve budgets and contracts, and the third is policy. So they will make that decision, and we make the best recommendation we can.
You know, it's historic. I mean, when you go to somebody and say, we are thinking about asking you to buy your property to put a school there, it reminds me of the stories that I've heard about where Fairview Elementary School is and how they went to it was a farm at that point in time, and how I think Robert Shaw and I can't remember who else. I mean, this is predates
Bob
you
Shaw,
and it predates
yeah.
me,
wow.
but they went up to the door, knocked on the door and said, hey, we're thinking about building a school here. Would you like to sell your property?
What? Things have changed a little bit since then. Uh-huh. And truly, I would love to see where we might push ourselves as a community to take the school district out of the real estate business. And instead, as development is going on, that there be some sort of city ordinance or requirement that then land be set aside for a school. Not that the developer has to build the school, but that as development continues to grow, I was at a meeting recently, a city council meeting, where they were the Ready Board was asking the council to approve a land purchase, right? The city was being asked to approve a land purchase for Aurora Milk. And it occurred to me there that, boy, it would be really nice if, so it was at that meeting that someone said, you know, you guys keep messing with people's attendance areas. And I said, well, every time we authorize new developments in the south of town and put families in the south of town, and there's only one middle school below Worley, all other 5 are Worley and North, it puts the school district in a pretty interesting position of having to change attendance areas. So it would be really nice that as development comes in, that there be land set aside for the school district to actually build a school so that everybody wins.
Mm. Dr. Peter Stiepelman is our guest. We need to pause and we'll do our newscast. We'll come back and keep him for a few more moments next. This is KFRU. We are joined this morning by Superintendent of Columbia Public Schools, Peter Stiepelman, and we appreciate him coming in early again. We were talking about the moving up the date for the middle school completion so that it would be completed by 2020 for the 2020-2021 school year, correct?
That's correct. 2020-21. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's move on from that. Let's see. You wrote down a bunch of things on your notes right there. Before I distract from that by asking you a couple of other questions I'm curious about, what did you come in with and write down on the little paper plate?
This is my little plate that says, what might David want to talk about?
What's on your plate?
So I thought you might want to ask about any legislation that's going on right now that might affect public schools and public schools in Columbia. Charter schools is one that we're watching and are really concerned about. Our Board of Education released their list of legislative priorities, which include the opposition to both vouchers and charter schools. And so if I could just share with your listening audience, one of the things that is most upsetting and disturbing and dismaying for us is this. If a charter school were to open in Columbia and just 100 students went to it, the Columbia Public Schools would lose $842,000. That's a lot of money. Now, 100 students doesn't allow us to then reduce staffing because 100 students over 18,000 is just a drop in the bucket. It's a scattering of students from all over. And so the more that communities allow charter schools to enter their communities, it truly is a dismantling of public education in their community. And I would urge anyone who's listening to talk with their legislators to really say and to dig a little bit deeper into whether or not charter schools are the option or the school reform tool that you really believe is appropriate for your local community.
Let me ask you this, because that was one of the things I was going to ask about. It starts at the top with Betsy DeVos's now as the Secretary of Education, and it is conversation that we hear in this state. Should there be legislation that, what would the legislation say? That it would not say you must have a charter school, would it?
No, right now the legislation is being proposed, although it has just gotten caught up in committee, is my understanding, because there are a number of rural superintendents who have been talking and expressing their concern about charter schools. And so rural legislators who are seeing that potentially if there's a if you're diverting money away from public education, that means less for their rural communities. So the legislation as it stands right now says the expansion of charter schools to any district in Missouri, which allows simply would allow local communities to choose whether or not they pursue them. But that means that a group could come together and authorize or seek authorization, not from just the school board. The school board is an entity that can authorize charter schools, but could go to a university or some other group to have a sponsorship. And with that sponsorship, there comes money that goes to the sponsor. So that's another, when you're talking about $500 million at minimum that the state is trying to figure out how are we going to make up that deficit, now is probably not the time to start adding new reforms that cost taxpayers money.
Because if somebody gathered together, got a group, and they said, we are wanting to open a charter school, will you sponsor us? We got the sponsorship. Then the money is taken away from the public school
budget
in order to publicly fund a charter school.
So the way that the formula works, and in the simplest terms, the money that the state would have given the school district follows the child. And that kind of makes sense, mm-hmm. right? So we in Columbia, we're 64% funded by the local community. So it is not that much that we get from the state, but it's $3,000 per child. So that's not insignificant at all, right? So that $3,000 follows the student. The formula also says that whatever the local community would have given to the school district for that child, so now $9,000, right? Mm-hmm. The state will withhold that money from the school district and send it to the charter school.
Hmm.
So that means that the school district gets less, you know, essentially loses the $12,000 it would have been spending on that child.
And that is for a charter school. Vouchers are another matter because vouchers would say here, if you're not happy with the school that your child would be assigned to in the public school district, then we'll give you money and you can make a decision where to send that child.
So in the conversation that the board had about their opposition to both vouchers and charter schools, one board member, who, and I won't attribute it to this individual, but I thought it was an interesting phrase, called vouchers welfare for the rich. And let's think about that for a second. So if you have a private school, and I was talking to a state senator down in Jefferson City just last week about our opposition to vouchers, and the senator said, you were at a school that had free and reduced lunch when you were principal. I said, yeah, at the time, West Boulevard had free and reduced lunches rates that were pretty high. That's not the case now. And so they said, well, I know somebody who's opening up a Christian school here in town. She will be the principal. And I asked, do you think it would be good for the West Boulevard kids that had been there? And she said, yeah, I think so. And I said, well, let's explore that just a little bit. So let's say the tuition's $5,000 at that school, which I believe it's probably a lot more because no private school operates at that low rate. So the tuition is $5,000, but the voucher is $2,000. Now so the family is now responsible for they're on the hook for $3,000. Plus, if you're referring to whom you are directing the voucher for students who need a different opportunity because they have underperformed in their current school and they believe that a private school will serve them better. There are already transportation issues that are associated for that child, food insecurities associated with that child. And so who's going to pay the $3,000? How's the kid going to get there every day? And how's he going to eat? And so that's something that the public schools do well. Right. And I understand those who might be listening who say, well, is that really the role of the public schools to feed every child? You can't learn if you're hungry. And so it is true that we participate in a federal program that allows us to feed children at no cost. You know, obviously it's cost to the nation because we all pay taxes, but it is at no cost to the student or the school district in that case. So vouchers are just not a good idea. It's a gift certificate. So there's empirical evidence that shows you who's using them. It is your family type, my family type, who is basically getting a gift certificate to go to a private school.
And can't the private schools decide who they want to allow in anyway?
That's right.
So they might not welcome with open arms the disadvantage that now public schools are taking
care of. That's right. And so let's also, I mean, you cannot associate, there's no causation between poverty and disability. However, if you are opening up the state to vouchers and charter schools, then there should be the same rules that apply to public school as well, which is that you don't get to choose who you get. And that takes money. And so when you move local money to that charter school that we would have gotten, my child costs less to educate as compared to a child who has autism, right? But as a community, we pool our money and serve all children.
Couple of questions before I let you go. Eric Greitens' budget proposal, he likes to stress that he is not taking money away from the public schools, secondary and elementary. However, there is less money for transportation, so the money still has to be paid for transportation. You have to dip into what you would spend that money on for other things in order
to cover
that loss.
That's exactly right. And I want to be careful because I do believe that the governor has tried to protect public education K-12. I see what's happening in higher ed, and I'm dismayed for them. Now, I know one of the things that the University of Missouri is asking for, Columbia, is the right to be able to charge tuition or be able to control how much they raise tuition. Right now, it's tied to they're not able to do that. For public education, though, you're absolutely right. So the law, and I don't know about you, but I don't get to choose which laws I follow and don't follow. But the law says that education will be funded at 75% transportation. At one point, we were getting 80% of our transportation money. Last year, we got 18%. With the cuts that are being proposed, it will be 16%, which means that we spend right now $12 million on transportation. That's a lot of money, 300 square miles. Last year, we received about $1.8 million from the state. So the community paid more than $10 million in transportation. Transportation costs continue to go up, and we're going to get less money. And so absolutely, we're going to have to pull that out of the operating budget to pay for transportation, which means less money for public education.
Final question. I told you off the air, I received a call a couple of days ago from someone who said, we would be better off as a nation to get rid of the Department of Education. I saw an editorial this morning. Actually, it was something that was either in the New York Times or the Washington Post. It was talking about how the education, federal Department of Education, only spends about 3% of the federal budget. So it's not a heavy price item. What would we lose if we did not have a Department of Education as part of the cabinet for the presidential administration?
So, and I want to be clear that I am very careful in my public persona to be careful about when I come out in and make a political statement, because I recognize that my role is not to be a politician. I felt that I had permission to be the voice of our school board because they were very clear on their legislative priorities. And so they oppose charter schools. They oppose vouchers. They do support local control. So one of the three is supported by Betsy DeVos. I'm sorry, Secretary DeVos. She is a proponent of local control. And that is really predominantly what we enjoy here in Columbia. We only receive about 5% of our budget from the federal government. But in that money is are some pretty important line items. So I reference the federal food program that we participate in. Special education monies. We receive Title I monies, and that is to offset the costs associated with working with students who are coming from high poverty situations. That, again, does not mean that if you're poor that you are not going to be successful. There are some challenges associated with children who are coming out of poverty in terms of food insecurities, housing insecurities, nutrition insecurities, childcare insecurities, and so we receive additional funds to be able to intervene for students. We receive Title II monies, and that is for professional development, and that is training of teachers. And we receive Title III monies, which is for monies for English language learners, refugee students, and so you can't. It is such a simple statement to say we'd be better off without it, right? There have to be some national standards, and there has to be a balance in terms of what are states' rights as well, and then in terms of what are the local communities' rights to establish their curriculum and standards as well. So I would enjoy having that conversation. I'm sure that I've just put some people back to bed. So wake up, wake up. There's a good reason for a federal government and for a federal Department of Education.
I appreciate you joining us early like you have now.
This is
three
fun.
Times. Yeah, well, maybe we'll do it again before the end of the school year, but we could do it regularly. But I can't ask you to do that because you're a busy man and you've got morning meetings sometimes. You've got other things taken care of. But thank you very much for your time
today. Thank you
today.
So much. I really appreciate it.